are. We got another Out Now Nights.
It's Aaron.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. This is Nights.
Get your coat on?
Night. Yeah. Get my Nights.
We're outside.
One of those summer coats I wear.
Chilly nights, yeah.
That's this is Night 32. Out Now Nights.
32. 11, 12, 13 years we've been doing this, and only 30.
Somehow we only have 32 Nights episodes. Man, if
it works
we
out, it works out.
If we actually ever went follow through with a Patreon, this would be a real exclusive content right here.
But it also begs the question, like, how is a Nights episode defined? It's like, I actually don't know. We don't know. Whenever we feel like it's just like a fun, loosey-goosey, like full spoiler episode, like that's a Nights episode.
If you do know, I think. What a
agreed. Yeah, yeah.
If we ever employed an intern, they would have to suss out what makes the difference between the two things.
But then they'd be confused too.
Well, they'd have the task of defining it for us. Then we'd be like, yes or no, and then we'd go forward from there.
Rubber stamping it. Yeah, got it.
Why are we here, Abe?
We're here to talk about the Phoenician Scheme.
Yes, the latest from Wes Anderson.
Yeah,
starring Benicio del Toro. And yeah, that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna talk about Phoenician Scheme, full spoilers, as if there's too much to spoil in a movie like this. But we're gonna so just keep that in mind. If you haven't seen the Phoenician Scheme, just know that we're gonna talk about all aspects of this film because why not? We want to talk about Wes Anderson. And without further ado, here's some trailer for the Phoenician Scheme.
At this moment, rescue workers are laboring to recover and identify the remains of Zsa Zsa Korda, international businessman, maverick in the fields of armaments and aviation, among the richest men in Europe. This was Korda's sixth recorded airplane crash. He is survived by 10 children, 9 boys, 1 nun, his daughter Liesl.
I've appointed you sole heir to my estate, which you may come into sooner rather than later.
Why? It's been 6 years since our last meeting.
I have my reasons.
Which are what?
My reasons? I'm not saying. Korda Land and Sea Phoenician Infrastructure Scheme. My most important project of my lifetime.
Our objective, disrupting, obstructing, impeding, crippling Korda's enterprise in any manner possible.
Get the hand grenades. Today, tonight, and tomorrow, we rendezvous with every Titan and pretend we agree what we already agree. But in fact, we don't. We can't.
That should have been some of the trailer for the Phoenician Scheme. I guess we just read like a brief plot synopsis.
Sure.
I don't have a whole spiel to dig out for Phoenician Scheme right now, but I will say this right now. Wealthy businessman Zsa Zsa Korda appoints his only daughter, a nun, as a sole heir to his estate. As Korda embarks upon on a new enterprise, they soon become the target of scheming tycoons, foreign terrorists, and determined assassins. The film once again stars Benicio del Toro and a long list of others, including Mia Therapleton, Michael Cera, Riz Ahmed, Tom Hanks, Bryan Cranston, Matthew Almerich, Richard Ayoade, Jeffrey Wright, Scarlett Johansson, Benedict Cumberbatch, Rupert Friend, Hope Davis, Bill Murray, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Willem Dafoe, F. Murray Abraham, Stephen Park, and there's still others. But yes, it's a large cast of regular Anderson players, along with some new folks as well. But with all that said, Abe, I think we've been pretty high on the last couple rounds of Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah. I have found the last few Wes Anderson movies to be quite thoughtful in his approach, and I know that people are just like, well, it's a whimsical guy, he loves like symmetry in his movies, he's kind of doing the same thing. It's like, I don't know, I feel like he's tackling a lot of different subjects in his movies that maybe something to go unnoticed, but I think if you're just watching with a casual eye, you would miss some of the things they're talking about. You know, the more that I watch Asteroid City, the more I'm like, this is a very sad movie.
It is
about one, the pandemic, but then also loss during the pandemic and just loss in general. It's like, this is a very profound movie to be making about a culture, or about a current thing that is happening in our society, in our world. And then on top of that, you have like the alienation thing of things too, right? With an actual alien.
And like the French Dispatch is this like lovely ode to journalism, as well as the various things involving the kinds of subjects of journalism, whether it includes different races or cultures or groups of people or what have you.
Especially like the death of journalism too. It's like everything's becoming more like, you know, electronic or, you know, quick read and quick edited. But long form journalism still matters, and especially like in the vignette with Jeffrey Wright, which is like a very powerful vignette. Mm-hmm. But all of it is good. So for Phoenician Scheme, like I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I was in my seat at some points, like clapping, like this is so whimsical and fun and neat. And then at another point, like I really got into the movie. I got so much into the movie where I was like, I kind of want to go explore this world that this Phoenician scheme is taking place in right now. But again, I think that if with a deeper look, it's a very fascinating movie about legacy, and it's a very fascinating movie about sort of like making wrongs right, but also giving up what you may have thought was correct in lieu of something that is much more simple and understanding, but also kind of getting your soul back in the form of like family, which is something that Wes Anderson has always touched upon. I think family is always like a core principle in a lot of his movies. But yeah, I really enjoyed Phoenician Scheme. I can't wait to go full on spoilers. But what do you think of Wes Anderson overall, his recent works, and then Phoenician Scheme?
To me, Wes Anderson has not missed. I don't think there's a film of his that's less than like a B+, if I was going to put it in those terms.
Also, we forgot to mention his Netflix stuff.
I really love The World of Henry Sugar and the other four shorts as well. That was great. Seeing just Roald Dahl shorts, knock it out. Just wonderful stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big Wes Anderson fan. I look forward to his films, and they constantly deliver for me. I find his style to be incredibly interesting, and I like that he's at this point of his career where he's not just coasting, but he's not exactly evolving. He's more of like using his style in the current place that it's in and shifting it around to tell different kinds of stories. Like you were saying, like, you know, Asteroid City has a very specific thing it's after, and it has an approach to it that feels very familiar. It's something like The French Dispatch or even this movie, but they have different themes in mind, different things they're going to kind of look into and take a microscope on. And just because he's interested in that thing at that particular moment, where some of his other films just represent different parts of his career. Like, I think you can put together Bottle Rocket up to Darjeeling Limited and see the kind of like they all kind of fit in a certain category of his tenure.
Right.
Or you can look at Moonrise, even obviously Fantastic is a different thing off its own trail, but like Moonrise feels like a shift in how he makes movies, where he starts incorporating other filmmaking techniques. And I think Grand Budapest is like the ultimate culmination of all of that.
Yeah.
So here we have this, like, it's like he's making like a living diorama. Like, that's what it feels like watching his past few films. And it's such a, like, and that's just a boiled down version of how to describe what he's doing on film. But with this one, compared to French Dispatch and Asteroid City, where those films had these kind of multi-layer things going on, I described it as like Russian nesting dolls
Kind
of film, especially Asteroid City, where you have this kind of story within a story kind of thing, and it keeps unveiling new layers. What I appreciate about Phoenician Scheme, a film I like quite a bit as well, is that it's very straightforward by comparison. It doesn't have a kind of bookending device or a sort of outer shell that you're going inside of. Instead, it just presents you a pretty straightforward story that's a comedic adventure.
Yeah,
it has darkness to it. It has themes to it that you already mentioned already. But like it does feel separate from the other ones as far as how it's trying to do what it's doing. Which in its own way is like, well, that's neat. But also, it's super fun. Like, it has a great cast that are all seemingly game to just do this thing. I like that Tom Hanks is in this mode where he's like, I'll just pop up as a supporting guy.
Yeah.
I don't need to be the guy in the
mode. He's part of like the repertory cast now.
I like that. I like that he's and not that like I'm against seeing Tom Hanks being the lead of a movie. If he wants to lead something, great, just don't beat Geppetto again. But if he wants to do something like this where he's just like, yeah, I'm like one of the biggest stars in the world, but I don't care. I can take like this 5-minute part with my friend Bryan Cranston. Like, that's fine.
I mean, he also did that with Freaky Tales too, where he just like pops up for like
he very much did
3 minutes.
Because of his Oakland pride.
Yeah.
This one, for one thing, I am such a big fan of Del Toro. Like, I think he's really one of our best actors of like his generation working today.
Yeah.
And the more I see,
who are other members of his generation?
Like Javier Bardem.
Okay.
Willem Dafoe, too, because I think he's a little older, but like still he's like in that league.
Okay.
I need to think of like how old
the guys from The Usual Suspects.
Del Toro's 58.
Like Gabriel Byrne.
Like ballerina's Gabriel Byrne.
what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. He fits I just think he's a real talent that I don't think he's underutilized, but he certainly has situated himself where he's rarely a lead of anything, right? He's not like the last time he's a lead is like what, the Sicario sequel, maybe?
Sequel, exactly. The sequel specifically.
And like that one Netflix movie was Reptile that he was in.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
He's like, he's often, you know, in an ensemble or like in a two or three hander. He's never like the guy, right?
Right.
So, and I was just saying this when what came out? What's the other Del Toro movie that just came out that we watched?
No Sudden Move?
It was only a movie, but like, that's a good movie too. But no, it was the trailer for One Battle After Another, the Paul Anderson movie that's coming out. And I watched that trailer and I'm like, he feels so locked in, and I've just seen 2 minutes of this. Yeah. And I'm like, why have we gotten like a Del Toro lead movie for a while? And then this trailer popped up a week later. I'm like, fuck right. yeah. It's cool to just see him be this guy. And like, and the fact that he's like given all, like, he can be such a quiet actor, one that like does a lot of less is more.
Which he did in his previous movie.
Yeah, pretty very much so. And he's even talked about that. He talked about how when he worked with De Niro on The Fan, of all things, De Niro gave him advice being like, hey, you know, you should hold back. Holding back dialogue is a great way to like enhance a character, because you have to act more without saying explicitly what you're doing. And he's held that to truth, because you see a lot of Del Toro roles, he doesn't say a lot.
You know? Yeah, you think about like The Usual Suspects, or even like The Way of the Gun, where it's like,
Way of the Gun's a huge less is more kind of role for him. Yeah. Usual Suspects, he's chatty. That's his whole deal.
He's chatty, but he's also like mumbly. Yeah.
He's mumbly, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So like watching this and being like, he has to handle like reams of Anderson's dialogue that's very specific and very like heavy into his machinations as a, like a, not corrupt, but like, I guess, non-moral mogul of sorts. Like, it's
that's a good way to phrase it.
It's not like he's not like a corrupt business guy.
He's not getting his hands dirty necessarily. He's not even directly. He is.
Yes. Yeah. So like,
which
whatever
he really admits.
Yeah. Whatever the case, like, it's a lot of technical jargon that's combined with the humorous side of things.
Right.
And, like, spewing out constantly in this movie, it felt like such a change of pace for him as an actor.
Yeah.
Like, I really loved seeing him in this kind of lead role. And on top of that, yes, you have all these supporting people, but the main supporting leads, Mia Therapleton and Michael Cera, they're tremendous in this also.
Yeah.
And I really like the different relationships all of them have to each other as a trio here.
Right. Right.
Obviously, there's a father-daughter story. There's this kind of possible romance angle going on. And then there's between Del Toro and Sarah, their connection. Like, I liked all of that a lot. Movie's a lot of fun. There's a lot of interesting things going on. So, yeah, I was a big fan of this movie.
Did you just tell Marseille Bob the Sacramento Consortium agreed to cover the gap?
No.
All of it, you said. I speak French, of course. You're fiddling with it again.
Okay, yes, but I'm doing a strategy. Listen carefully.
Is this supposed to be here? It was under the lunch trolley.
Oh, dear.
How much time does this have?
18 minutes.
Perfectly fine. We land in 10. Myself, I feel very safe.
Yeah, I want to touch upon a couple of things that you brought up. One of them, the Wes Anderson, his filmography, but also like his powers and how they've come to be. Like, I feel as though people are like, well, you know, Wes Anderson, he makes like quirky movies. Like, yes, he has very specific aesthetic. I mean, that's what makes him an auteur by definition. You know, he has his own look. He has his own feel. He wants things to work a certain way. I've heard a lot of great anecdotal stories about how fun it is to work on a Wes Anderson movie, because you kind of like all live like a little village with each other and you all kind of like hang out, which adds to like the fun atmosphere of like being at theater camp, so to speak. But I think what's also, again, not that it's gone by the wayside, but when you peer into the directorial powers of Wes Anderson, they have grown exponentially since like he's done like a Rushmore or something like that, or even like since he did Royal Tenenbaums, which I think is his best movie. Mm-hmm. I think Grand Budapest is like his most complete movie, but the Royal Tenenbaums, like, it's clear that, like, you know, he put a lot of like personal effort into that, even to the point of trying to get Gene Hackman. And then being told by Gene Hackman no, kind of thing, until he agreed upon it. But I think Wes Anderson has really grown as a director, almost as like an edge to audiences or even to critics, to be like, I'm a master at this. And you might not see it all the time, but when you rewatch it or when you watch it and it makes an impact on you, you will feel my hands at work. And again, this is no knock to like a layman or somebody who just watches casually Wes Anderson movies, but watch them again. You know what I mean? Like, I would ask you to watch them again, because you can definitely see like a craft in, sure, all the production design and everything, and the timing of the speech and the way that he writes is very nuanced. But as a filmmaker, you know, you and I have talked about like the themes that he's got going on in a lot of his other movies. Like, they just become, he's actually like a very like present, so to speak, storyteller. You know, he will take things of the cultural zeitgeist that he cares about to make a film about it. I mean, this movie has a lot of things going on in it, which you and I just talked about too, but also one of the themes is like this weird relationship with like the federal government, where Michael Cera's character, he is one thing, then he's another, and then he just leaves it. He's just like, I don't know, like this really isn't for me. And he kind of goes to explore his own talents. But that's one thing. I think the other thing that you were talking about with Benicio del Toro is it took me a minute to kind of warm up to him in this movie, because I had previously seen him in where he's like the jailed painter. Yeah. And so he's very quiet in that movie. He doesn't say a whole lot. And when he does, it's kind of like comedic, but also quite cryptic. Mm-hmm. In any case, like it took me a second to warm up to it. But once I got into the pentameter of like the way that he's speaking, the way that Anderson is writing, and Del Toro, you know, he certainly has like a little bit of an accent too, but it's like, it really does work out. Like he becomes a more fully fleshed out character, and it worked for me too.
What I think I love right away at this movie is, well, for one thing, the thing I love right away obviously is the very hilarious blowing up of the plane and the person's torso that's left.
Yeah, I was shocked by that.
It's so jarring as far as like how graphic that is, and it's like, yeah. Wow. But no, there's a lot of things going on right at the start of this movie. Like, I love the whole Bergman-like black and white shots of him in like this other reality, as far as like whether or not he's going to go past to an afterlife. And I like that thread. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And seeing certain actors pop up in there, and you're like, who's next? And then inevitably there's one actor. But no, when he wakes up
with the force perspective, it's really fun.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. Yeah. Hey, he's Snoke now.
He's got multiple clones out in a distant planet.
Somehow he returned. When he wakes up from that, and you get this great shot of just his face taking up the entire screen, as the like camera tracks, and then it like slowly pulls away from it as he's walking through this cornfield.
Right.
And it's like, that's fucking movie star stuff right there. That's so cool. Yeah. Like, it's such a, like, Anderson, I don't think really, he does close-ups, but like not a lot, and like
not always.
There's certainly purpose to them, like the iconic one of Gwyneth Paltrow getting off the bus and we're all ton of moms is one.
That scene with the Nico song.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's sublime.
So seeing Del Toro get like one of these epic shots, and his face is all fucked up from the plane crash and everything.
Plane crash, yeah. And he's chewing corn.
He like takes a piece of the corn just out of the thing and like bites and throws it off. Like he looks like Lon Chaney. He looks like an old fashioned movie star in that scene.
I mean, he was a Wolfman, like, wasn't he?
He was a Wolfman, exactly. But he has that kind of a face, like where it's like this guy can just do this thing. And that's why, like, it is like you saying you have to get used to him kind of speaking this pentameter makes perfect sense, because you're so used to just seeing Del Toro being like a striking image on screen. So seeing him like delve into the, you know, percentages of money that needs to be spent on different aspects of this secretive thing that's going, it's like, this is like, it's nuts to like have him, to hear him speak this much in a movie.
I would agree. Yeah. I think this is definitely the most that he's written lines wise, you know, and like on screen, you know, at a certain period of time, like it's probably the most that he said.
Oh yeah, words per minute must be nuts on his scale for sure. Exactly. But yeah, on top of them, yes, you have these other characters, and you're introduced to this, you know, his family. I found all this stuff like really delightful in the way he's like explaining how it works, and he has his daughter who's like a nun in training, or a novice. Coming in, and like he has like nine other boys that are,
some of them are adopted, some of them are like biological, because he's like, I want to play the odds. It's like, this is such a weird guy.
The way he phrases that, I want to play the odds.
Yeah, exactly. Like, which is like, because at first I was like, wait a minute, is this his kid? And then like, no, he's adopted. And like, and then he explains the adoption part, but again, in a very Wes Anderson way. But again, it speaks to like his narcissism at a certain point too. Sure. It's like, I need heirs. I also I'm trying to find out the right formula for me to win in life. And that comes across very apparently when he's speaking to his daughter, his only daughter, who's the eldest. And he's like, I need you to do this for me, because I don't want my money going to the federal government, and I don't want like anyone stealing our business here, so you're gonna become my sole heir. And she plays it well. I mean, I didn't know who this person was. I had to look it up.
He's pretty new.
But do you know who her parents are?
I do now. I did know this. Yeah, Kate Winslet.
I didn't know. Yeah, I was like, oh, her mother's Kate Winslet. She looks exactly like Kate Winslet.
Yeah, when you could see it once you really realized.
Yeah, once I knew, I was like, oh, wow, that is true, yeah. But she's also very game for this. I mean, she is, you know, we're going to talk about Michael Cera in a second here, but I haven't seen her in anything else, and she picks up the Wes Anderson style very quickly, and it's very good.
She's in this movie. She's you know, in every scene with.
She's ostensibly like the co-lead.
Yeah, so it's a lot to put onto somebody, but she certainly adapts.
Yeah,
what she needs to. I love that it starts with him having basically an epiphany, because that's for a character like this that you could easily question, why am I supposed to care about this guy? That's a great starting point for any movie like this that deals with like big business and somebody like having to turn a new leaf. It's like, this guy nearly died again, and now he has to like forcibly think about like, what's my future actually going to be? Not this version that I wanted to be. What makes sense for me to do? And it's like, I like that that's the preceding journey that we take.
Yeah. And again, it gets really heavy in like the Bergman-esque scenes that you're talking about, because they certainly deal a lot with like, it feels like some sort of like absolution and guilt. And also redemption, because even in the first scene where he's like, he's talking to his dead mother and he's like, why are we here? And then this casket opens and it's like this young boy. And then it goes to what you're talking about, like with present day Del Toro. But there are other sequences too. And I really like, I love two sequences. I'm jumping ahead here, but one of them is the sequence where he brings a deer. And it's almost as if he's like, I have worked hard for all this money in real life. Doesn't this matter? And the ghosts tell him this doesn't matter here. You know what I mean? And then the other sequence that I really enjoy is when a grenade goes off and it's a slow motion walk. And I was like, this is if this were to end this way, this would be beautiful. So, But very, very heavy handed in some of those, even though they are very comedic with obviously like fake bald caps and fake wigs and giant ears. Like it's very obvious that these people are just wearing, you know, theater costumes, but
yeah,
it's dramatic work
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like having the familiarity of having like Willem Dafoe in that scene
and F. Murray Abraham. Yeah, exactly.
Like it helps settle you into what that's trying to be pretty quickly, as opposed to
who's like one of the wives,
Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Very famous actress, British actress. Yeah, Charlotte Gainsbourg. You want to get into Michael Cera?
Yeah, Michael Cera just steps into this
third lead.
Like, steps into this film being like, I've of course been in every Wes Anderson film ever because obviously I belong here. Like that's the attitude he gives me. Like he's so perfectly adept to this,
right?
Even while playing like a character, like he's not just playing Michael Cera. He's like
playing Bjorn something.
Playing Bjorn Lund, a Norwegian entomologist.
Right.
And it's like, how has he not been with Wes Anderson before? Like, it's such a perfect pairing with him. And he's very funny. He's got
some of the funniest lines in this movie, because there's a point where they're having beers and he's like trying to like flirt with her, and he gets mad that she's been flirting with Riz Ahmed's character. He's like, why can't you like me like that? And he like breaks his pretzel. He's like, well, I just get angry when I'm drunk. And she's like, I can't date you. You get drunk off of three beers. But there's like a really nice plot twist with him too, which if we're going full of spoilers, he's a double agent for the federal government. He's a spy, and he has multiple identities. So when he does a character change, I was like, this is fucking great. Because it's not just like he rips his mustache off. He goes full like Michael Cera would go in either like, you know, Scott Pilgrim or something like that, where he like pops his collars. He undoes his tie and he's like just American accent, like, yeah, I'm pretty much playing the same character. That's a line from the movie. And I'm like, this is fantastic. So
it speaks to how talented he really is as far as able to like convey different personas within a scene and make it both funny, but also incisive as far as who is this guy? Like, what's the gain from making this choice? Like, it has stuff to offer in that realm that I think is really...
Sure.
It strengthens the relationship aspect of this movie, where a film like this could easily just be all quirk and not have much depth to the actual, you know, the nuance of what's going on between these relationships. But instead it does. Like, there's something there. I like seeing these two together. They do have good chemistry.
Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of what drives, like, one part of it is what drives me to want to go see this movie again as soon as I can, because they have a really good chemistry together. But also, it's just a very interesting character. You know, he's playing a pretty cool guy. I want to ask you about the scheme itself, because you rightly mentioned and pointed out that this is much more of like a streamlined plot than some of the other Anderson movies. And they actually go through all of like the plot details with you in the first 15 minutes of this movie. But to help you out, they also still center on these different shoeboxes that they have to get through. But curious, like, your thoughts on what they have to do and the scheme itself.
I think I did see this twice.
You did?
Like,
okay.
Yeah, so my dad's a big Wes Anderson fan also, so I was like, I want to see it with him. And so I was happy to, honestly.
Dad's movie corner?
He thought it was fine. I think he would also benefit from seeing it again. Like, I know he really liked Asteroid City. I think, like, he didn't like this one as much.
Got it.
And I would actually say the same. I would say I prefer Asteroid City. I like this one. I like this movie plenty. But, like, if I'm looking between the two of them, I'd say I like Asteroid City more. But regardless, as far as the other, like, the plotting and whatnot of this goes, I already mentioned, the straightforwardness of it is its own thing. I like that it's an interesting way to use his players, because instead of them just having, like, interloping storylines where they kind of come in and out, and they kind of do, but like it, as opposed to something like Asteroid City where we're constantly checking in on different characters and different aspects of what's going on in the story, this is more of a linear plot, right? It's like, okay, we got to visit this person, and we're going to have our activities here, then we're going to visit this person, have our activities here, and the film has interesting ways of challenging Korda as far as his the reactions the people he meets with have to him trying to do what he needs to do. And at the same time, it holds on to something of a mystery as far as, like, what is this all adding up to?
Right.
It's weird to say it's interesting to see him make a straightforward movie, but it kind of is, right? It does feel like
it doesn't deviate anyway.
And since we haven't, like, had that from him in a while, it feels like fresh in a certain kind
interesting
of way.
Interesting so, take. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
All right. For the most part, I think it was more fascinating when I read up on, like, an Armenian businessman that maybe Zaza Korda has been based off of. And I was like, wow, it's very similar in parallels with, like, what's happening with that person and what they're trying to accomplish as well, which was, like, a lifelong earning to make take care of his family, very much the same way that Zaza Korda is doing in Phoenician Scheme. So it was very fascinating on that level. And this movie is dedicated to, I think, his father-in-law. So I haven't looked up, you know, that relationship, but I'd be curious to see how that also ties into this. But as far as, like, the plot goes,
go on.
I just like that the plot, it has interesting characters within each of the segments. And while it's pretty cut and dry, because they give you clues on the screen with title cards, there's, like, how much percentage somebody's willing to pay. Like, it's much more of a, here's Tom Hanks wearing a Pepperdine sweater, and their best thing that they do is they play basketball for deals, you know, or Riz Ahmed showing up in, like, a linen suit and with his driver who has a machine gun, you know. So it's really fun on that aspect. Or even, like, Matthew Almerich, who is a player that's been around for a lot of Wes Anderson stuff. And he's just got really funny lines. He's like, I know that this is a robbery. Just take the money. Well, don't ruin my ceiling.
Yeah, I like Richard Awade is a polite revolutionary.
Yes, exactly. Like, this money is going to go to good things. We promise you. It's going to go to care and for our supporters' financial backings.
What I was going to say in conjunction with what you're saying about the story itself, as far as the results go, I agree with you that the idea of having this kind of self-sustaining thing that's, like, the end result, that's interesting to me. I did find, and how that eventually leads to what's going on with Korda versus what the results of the whole scheme was, I really fell for that. Like, that's for a movie that, like, I already said I prefer Asteroid to this one, and part of that's because I think Asteroid has more of a, it has more of an emotional punch to it.
Sure, yeah.
This one, I can see, over time, I can see it more and more working off on me as far as, like, what the kind of final beats are. It has, perhaps, like, this movie, is very much made, and because Wes Anderson was like exploring his thoughts on having a daughter. I know that's a big part of like what to write this story.
Okay.
And like
that makes a lot of sense now.
It does, right? So like I don't have children, let alone a daughter. So like I'd be curious
that
you know
of. That's a simple joke.
That's not a thing. I don't need to mislead listeners of this, like, that kind of stuff. I would be curious, regardless of if I have a daughter or not, but just like the idea of thinking more along the lines of what it is for a father to be exploring that kind of relationship in conjunction with having this overriding Wes Anderian type plotting, and then like where that takes him ultimately as a character and what he's decided to settle down with. I think there's some interesting stuff there that he's certainly going after.
Yeah, I really like that idea too. And the idea of just like, you know, people say this all the time, but like, you know, if you have a family, you have kids who love you and you love them and you care for each other, you're the richest man in the world kind of thing. And that kind of comes to fruition in this movie to some degree too, because you know, we'll get to the Benedict Cumberbatch thing of all things, but the closeout of this is very sweet, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Did you have a favorite of the people he visited, like a favorite group?
I just liked that they played basketball in one sequence, and horse. I like basketball. Yeah, it was like a weird horse game. My second favorite would probably be Jeffrey Wright. Just because of the way that he's speaking, which is like, come on, man.
I'm always instantly drawn in when Jeffrey Wright's doing a thing.
I'm like, oh, do I need a blood transfusion? It's like, he just passes out like, well, I have O negative, universal blood type, man. It's like
the detail of them like having a conversation while the third guy's in the background like constantly pumping
the blood
and manually doing
but he stops to listen to their scheme, and it's like, oh. It's all very well done. Did you have a favorite character?
I mean, it's hard because the Tom Hanks Cranston stuff is so obviously designed to be as funny as possible.
Yeah.
That shot where Riz Ahmed like throws the basketball under the hoop, it goes under, comes back in, and Tom Hanks is just like, two zip.
He's like, does that count? Like,
no, but I've never seen it before. it's so funny.
Classic backhand layup.
I beg your pardon.
I didn't say anything.
Did you hear what Mr. Reagan just spoke to me? When he refers to my mother, he refers to the sovereign queen of a population of 10 million loyal subjects.
He didn't say anything about the sovereign queen. Don't listen to that. He's trying to get in your head. Just play your game, Farouk, if I may call you that, Your Highness.
I don't know how to play my game. It's utterly foreign to me.
You're good.
I'm not good!
Two zip.
Does that count?
It doesn't count, but I've never seen it done before.
And it's so fun, like, of how bad they, like, because Brett Dundee's Del Toro, like, throws a basket, and it fucking hits, like, the back of the train. Like,
it's
like, absolutely, like, their deal hinges on them beating them in this game. And Rizabeth's constantly like, I do not know this game, nor do I know the rules or how to play it.
It's like, well, I especially like that the first thing that he does is he just runs up to, like, to your shot that you just described. He runs up to it, and then after the fact, Benicio del Toro's like, you're supposed to dribble the ball.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know any concept of this game. So that's a fun like trio of characters that they meet because it's Bryan Cranston, Tom Hanks, and Riz Ahmed.
What else?
Want to get to the Benedict Cumberbatch of things?
Okay, so yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch comes in here with the most ridiculous fucking facial hair.
They're reminiscent of like a lot of different characters, like maybe like a Karl Marx, but also like some other people too.
It's so over the top ridiculous. It's so much nonsense, and yet I can't be nothing but compelled by whatever this is going to be with him as Uncle Nubar, as Cordis' estranged half-brother.
Yeah.
Who, like, we learn more nefarious things about.
Yeah, like, who may or may not be the actual father of his daughter, but always unclear.
This stuff was just fun. It's fun to, like, see him get to this point where he has to deal with this guy now. This guy's the most eccentric weirdo of all of them. It's like... and we haven't even talked about the constant running theme of Cordos visiting all these people and offering free grenades.
That's right,
the grenades obviously come into play eventually, and it's like, this is... good stuff. But
the hand grenade.
The Cumberbatch stuff is over the course of this podcast, we've talked a lot about Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch.
That's correct,
And
it's been a while since you've said his name. full name.
It's been a while. Yeah. I've said it off air a lot. Because I'll never forget it. But seeing him, you know, we've gone from him being like, what, Sherlock and Intimidation Game to now we're like, he's a quirky Wes Anderson character.
Yeah, exactly.
And he fits. He's so, it's funny.
He does, like, yeah. Like watching The Wonderful World of Henry Sugar, I was kind of, it's not that I was skeptical, but I was curious how he would play with Wes Anderson. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He fits right in. Like, he kind of, it's not that he elevates it, but he brings a different kind of mood to the Anderson speak, and also, like, I guess to, like, what you're seeing on the screen. But what I enjoyed about that sequence is it's very physical. Like, they actually did something in, actually, what movie was it where somebody was beating somebody up with, like, a remote?
Somebody's what?
Somebody's beating somebody up with a remote, and, like, it's just showing, like, a bunch of, like, hijinks on a TV in the back. What movie was I watching? In any case, this movie has, like, a lot of, like, pratfall kind of stuff and silly stuff, like, in the third act, which can be hard to do, but they choreographed it very well. And so it becomes – it's a very – it's a serious situation because of what Benedict Cumberbatch represents, which is, like, I'm going to take your empire – and I'm also going to ruin your entire, like, line of inheritance. And Benicio del Toro doesn't want that to happen. So they have, like, a little, like, running around of things. And it's very funny and very fun. But also, there's also, like, a weird bit of, like, stray luck in there, too. Because I'm thinking about the part where he throws, like, the purple smoke grenade.
Yeah, a little vial at him. Yeah.
And just, like, doing it off his head. But I found that to be quite fun and energetic because it's just them Scooby-Dooing it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The whole climax. And, like, it also, you know, for a film that's much like all the other Anderson films, has, you know, so much revolved with, like, the symmetry of scenes and everything. That's a scene where it breaks it and, like, has a handheld chase sequence happen. It's like,
oh, I didn't even notice that. That's a good catch.
Yeah, it's fun to, like, just see, like, the format completely goes in half all of a sudden because it's like they take the camera and start running around. Which I'm sure he's done it since Royal Tenenbaums, but the closest I can think is back in Royal Tenenbaums when he, like, Stiller's chasing Owen Wilson after he crashed.
Yeah, over the yard. Yeah.
I can't think of another, like, handheld sequence offhand where Anderson just, like, goes nuts like that. But
yeah, I have to go watch that again. I did not even pick up on that. Because, again, it seems so symmetrical to me.
And I mean, what else can we say about the production design by Adam Stockhausen? Like, this movie looks immaculate. It's so fresh and colorful.
The opening credits are fucking incredible.
With all the nurses coming in.
It's just
in
an overhead shot of a bathroom with, like, multiple doors, multiple nurses doing different things. And the design that they chose for the tiling kind of closely resembles the font and the color of the font.
It's very much blending in.
But it is just, it's a very nuanced piece of work just for opening credits. And so, I would agree that, you know, production design, Alexander Desplat on here again, which it seems like he's a in-house player at this point.
Yeah, and this one's a little more limited because they use a lot of classical tracks as well. So it's like,
it's true, which he gives credit to in the credits.
In a fun way, like, the credits are pretty animated in that way. They're giving a lot of credit.
Credits are very fun. Yeah. They also, like, roll from, like,
balancing.
Yeah. Right to left. Yeah. So it was really fun on that front. I guess just on the way that this movie ends up, where were you with it?
Like you said, I found it really affecting to see the kind of how small it takes things after having such a kind of grandiose presentation of all the things that we're watching Korda and company go through. Especially, and that's why I was mentioning the production design, the kind of the lair that Nubar lives in. Like, it's such a wild design. It feels like all the other places are kind of not minimalist, but, like, you know, there's an underground railroad thing. There's Scarlett Johansson stuff's like, what, just like a small.
She's at a mill of some kind.
Yeah, like it's fairly, like, by comparison, there's a kind of elaborate nature to everything going on around Cumberbatch's section that I found to be really, like, intricate in a way that, like, just expanded more of what we're seeing. Plus the fucking the big model Phoenician scheme that he's like, I'd love to see the man. I want to see, like, the what's it called,
the scale model.
No, well, that too. I'd love to see the scale model, actually, but the, what is it where you shoot, like, one shot and it just, like, you fast forward through, like, the whole thing? time lapse. The time lapse.
Oh, time lapse.
Of,
okay.
Like, of like them building this ridiculous model.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Looks,
yeah,
like crazy. So, like, yes, after getting all of that kind of bigness from the film, the maximalist version of what we're doing,
yeah,
I love how quaint the ending is and how quiet and just fitting it is to see, like, where everything went. Where,
yeah,
where it's doing a lot of things at once, right? It's grounding things again, it's providing an update on the plot, and it's giving you this sense of how this character we followed has grown. Where he starts out as a guy who has, you know, he can pretty much do anything he wants to, and he has all the means to do so. And then he gets to a point where he's like, I could give all of this up and instead focus on just being a better person, a better father.
Right.
And also getting rid of my penchant for enjoying slave labor, apparently, which is like a big part
of it. Well, he paid for it. Yeah.
And now he's paying for it.
Yeah. He also ended the famine. Yeah.
Yes. So it's like he becomes like the ultimate good. And it all ties into the whole the black and white theological stuff going on in the film. So it's like, does it collapse all on itself in the most perfect of ways compared to other Wes Anderson movies? I wouldn't necessarily say so, but I do think what it's doing, I really admire what it aims for and how it kind of all wraps up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, when you kind of mentioned that it's contemplation around fatherhood, you know, again, acceptance is a big thing in this movie. Acceptance of who you are and also acceptance of your roles and responsibilities as an individual and as a person. Because in the beginning, he's not so accepting of his family. Like, again, he's looking for heirs and he's looking for, like, ways to, like, continue his money, his money funding. And by the end of it, he's just like, the most important things to me are that I have a relationship with this daughter that has been estranged, and also my sons who now live in-house with me. And he's not like necessarily a pauper, P-A-U-P-E-R, but he is a more simple man by the end of this movie, but probably more fulfilled, which for sure. I found like very, very heartwarming, because how this movie ends is like, it's you hear in the movie that he was also either orphaned or he grew up like in some sort of boarding house where he learned from the nurses how to cook and how to do something else. And it's just like, it all boils down to these things. Like, again,
wash,
like,
dishes. He's gonna
wash dishes,
cooking and washing dishes. Those are his things he's good at. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, a lot of Wes Anderson's movies are about healing too, you know, like personal healing. Whether you think about like the Royal Tenenbaums, like, you know, a father figure that was absent and then all of a sudden he's there and he wasn't there always, but he's there now, you know, or even like, the Grand Budapest Hotel, where it's like, I loved my wife so much and I love M. Gustav so much, I kept this place so that I could live like with a ghost of my wife, even though the hotel's gotten dilapidated. Like, it's a weird, like, that movie is also like quite meta, because it's like it's a movie about a book and a writer telling you about the book kind of thing. So it's kind of three nesting dolls, like what you're talking about earlier. But yeah, like, this Wes Anderson he's got a strong feeling for these things. And so I always find it fascinating to dissect his stuff. And I just want to like consume all these like thought pieces about his movies. So, yeah. And again, not to get too far off the reservation here, but you and I talked when there was like that huge spike in Wes Anderson TikToks and Wes Anderson Instagram videos. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, you guys are missing a lot of the things that Wes Anderson would do. And it's not so much like the aesthetic, but it's the feeling that you get when you do the aesthetic. And so like you're missing it. Even though music is there, like, you're kind of missing a lot of other elements, which make it blend together.
It's misplaced. Like, is it like, it doesn't, like, for one thing, Wes Anderson movies are funny. Like, nothing about,
I mean, the 30 second videos, Aaron, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, but like just seeing like, you know, what if this, but Wes Anderson, it's just like an image of like a thing in like a sweater or something. It's like, I mean, okay, like that's kind of there, but like there's nothing funny about this. There's nothing that's engaging me in any other way beyond that's a cute gag. So it's like, it just annoys me. That's why I don't care.
Yeah, I hear like, you. Yeah. I'm glad that the trend went away. So
yeah, but anyway, anything else? What else on the Phoenician Scheme? I mean,
I want to see it again, but I certainly am trying to read a little bit more on it too. I have to read about, you know, the daughter thing, because I'd be fascinated, because even when you said it right then and there, like, my eyes have opened up quite a bit to it.
The thing I've been saying recently when it comes to Wes Anderson films specifically is, like, it's not that I require people to, I don't require anybody to do anything, but they can do what they want to, but it's not like I feel like it's required to watch a film twice to get it. If you want to watch it and get it, or enjoy it, or do it however you want to, that's fine. There's no reason to say, like, you definitely got to see this twice. I don't want to be a person that has to say that, because the movie should be able to stand on its own. The thing I've also said is, like, much like you don't look at a painting once, you know, you don't have, like, you can, I guess, but, like, art invites you to explore it in so many different ways.
Right.
And it's, in, like, granted, there's a time commitment that's different than art as far as, like, a painting goes, because, like, you don't require 2 hours to watch a painting, but you require 2 hours to watch a movie. But we're in such a place where it seems so easy to just kind of, like, watch a movie once and then, like, throw it away. But at the same time, films like this, many films like it, as far as just daring to say something more.
Right.
There's so much value in, yes, exploring something like you would a painting and saying, you know what, I'd be happy to watch the thing again just to explore the different details I'm not necessarily cluing into.
Right. Yeah.
I think as a culture, we're so tuned into thinking story and plot are the main things we need to accept when we're taking in movies. But there's so many different aspects of what you can appreciate the most about a film, whether it's just purely performance or purely production design or purely sound or choreography in some way. That's why we can speak to certain films like an RRR, for example, where, like, I'm less in, like, the story is the story, but, like, there's more there that I truly appreciate about what that movie that enamors me to it so much.
Yeah.
Something like Phoenician Scheme, like, the story's interesting for sure, but, like, it's so, like, deep in its understanding of, like, how can we invest in all these different actors we've tried to put on the screen? What all these little details that they have about their character, how they behave, how they speak, how they dress. There's so much I think you can continually take away from just daring to watch this movie a second time or a third time or a fourth time, because Anderson is very deliberately making it feel that way. Yeah. Again, if you watch it once and you like it, or you don't like it and you never want to watch it again, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, do you.
But Anderson isn't saying you should only watch my movie once. He's saying, you know what? I put this piece of art here on display, and however you choose to consume it, go for it, because there's plenty here to enjoy. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, even just movies in general, you and I, we watch movies all the time. You watch, you know, 500 movies a year kind of thing. But it's very fascinating to watch things that you've seen before at different ages too. Because they kind of provide different things, especially, like, as you gain life experience. And in the Wes Anderson world of things, an example here would be, like, Rushmore, where I watched it when I was in college, and I was like, it's about a bratty kid who just, like, wants to, like, you know, be cool and older and, like, make movies and trying to hit on, like, you know, the wife from The Sixth Sense. And then now that you're older, it's like, it's actually this kid that has, like, a lot of, like, weird pseudo-father issues, that is looking for a father figure, and he's looking for them in the wrong places. And the one person that actually is his father figure is the guy who gives him, like, haircuts, and who's actually his real dad, right?
It's his father, yes.
Yeah. And so, like, it's acceptance of who you are, but also that you got to slow down. You're like a teenager. Like, you don't understand the complexities of, like, you know, the divorce or, you know, these adult relationships.
It's the whole thing is that he tells Bill Murray that his dad's a brain surgeon.
That's right. Yeah.
And, like, and by the time he finally introduces him to his dad, because it's one of my favorite things in any Wes Anderson movie, when he introduces him to his dad and Bill Murray just sees that it's just a man that works at a barbershop, and Bill Murray's face sinks. It's such a fun.
I know.
It's such a terrific acting moment for Bill Murray.
Right. And he's sits down for the haircut.
And because, you know, he's just like, he's at the bottom, right? He's just
exactly
strung out. It's like, what else can I do in my life?
Right.
And he just gets this realization that this kid that's been, I've been at war with, he's not really much different than
he's just a kid.
He's just a kid.
Exactly. And then the other thing that I would say, like, in terms of other pop culture or other movies, is, like, you know, you can go watch Ryan Coogler movies again. They're full of meaning. Or even go watch a Jordan Peele movie. They're full of meaning. But they can also just be what you're saying. You can also just take away that they're entertaining movies.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with absorbing art the way you choose to absorb art.
Exactly.
But it is, frankly, why I rewatch stuff so much. It's because I really like the idea of getting something out of it that's different than the last time.
Sure.
Whether it's focusing on just one specific thing or trying to put myself in a different perspective or whatnot, I like that process of not just throwing on something because I want to throw it on, which I do also.
Sure.
But because there's presumably something else I can take away from this thing that I already either enjoy or didn't enjoy, but felt challenged enough by to think that I could maybe find something I do like about it the next time I watch it.
So, yeah.
Like, well, I rewatch bad movies, or not bad movies, but I rewatch movies that I'm more questionable on far more than I rewatch my favorite movies.
Your one-star movie reviews on Letterboxd?
I mean, let's not get carried away here. I don't
know. Well, don't ruin my game. Because I need those one-star movie reviews. You actually don't have that many of them, and so it, like, I'm getting to the point where it's like it's hard to disguise them because you definitely know which ones you gave one-star movie reviews to. So
fair enough.
Yeah. You've only got like 100 of them or something like that. So, and in any case, yeah, Phoenician Scheme. Not a whole lot else to say. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I would, you know, tell people to go check it out too.
Yeah, certainly check it out while you can. It's great to see that Anderson movies are like getting play, especially now. Like he's been focused for the past two, this and Asteroid City, and I like that their focus is like, let's make it like a summer release, partially because it's entertaining in a way where it feels like a nice way of counterbalancing. But I like that it's like, yeah, this would be like a, like, why not? Let's put Anderson out in the summer. He's been around long enough where he's never going to be a box office juggernaut, but he certainly is a guy that people are familiar enough with.
Right.
Like we know what we're, if we're going to see a Wes Anderson movie, we kind of know what we're getting into. And I think that's showing in the fact that Asteroid City made a good amount of money for a Wes Anderson movie. And this movie looks like it's also going to turn in a decent profit for what I assume doesn't cost very much to begin with.
So. Yeah. I said it on like an old episode or a previous episode, but he's one of the great American filmmakers.
He truly is. I truly feel that way.
Yeah. Because like you can only name like a few of them, like Paul Thomas Anderson, Wes Anderson, maybe like a David Fincher. Who else?
Maybe I'd like even argue like Peele at this point, as far as what he's going for, and as far as like modern America, I think like there's something there. That he's...
Yeah. Steven Soderbergh. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, again, he's in a very elite company. So, and this might be like snooty talk, however you take it. But yeah, I'd be happy to, you know, have a conversation with anybody about Wes Anderson.
Well, this movie's currently playing in theaters. We both recommend it highly. Go check it out. Have a ball. Or don't, but mainly do. It's good to have a ball. It's good to have, you know, enjoy the movies that you watch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's all we need to talk about on this episode of Nights.
Nights.
And you know where you can find our show. We're on all the socials and everything like that.
Yeah, we're online.
And yeah, I guess that's going to do it for episode 32 of Outnow Nights.
Nights. Good night.